Kiss the Ground is a show on Netflix. It's about an hour and a half long. It's one I highly recommend. I watched it this week, and I'm going to be doing a bit of a review of it in today's episode. I'm putting this right at the start just to say you might enjoy it if you watch the show first, but you don't have to. You absolutely do not have to. You can watch them. You can watch the show, then listen to the podcast, or you can listen to the podcast and then watch the show. But I'm putting this at the start just to let you know that although it's not, there's no plot, it's not a movie, you know, people who are averse to spoilers and hearing about things before they see them might want to put this episode on pause until they've watched it. But either way, I do recommend it. And for now, let's get into it. Hello. And welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 122 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today, we are going to be talking about the Netflix show, Kiss the Ground. Now, I'm sure it's available elsewhere, but I know that it's available on Netflix. And it is a program that deals with, basically, climate change and how just using our soil differently can help dramatically in our fight to combat it. There's lots and lots to talk about throughout this episode and throughout the film, basically, and I watched it this week. As you all know, I've been convalescing over the last few weeks with an injury, and I've spent a significant amount of time, certainly compared to usual, watching Netflix, and it was recommended to me by one of our patrons, and that's Julie over at Elegant Sufficiency. She recommended the show, and I watched it this week. And I think that it's one that all of you listeners will really, really enjoy. It's a look at different practices. It focuses mainly on farming practices, but it is a bit of a wider remit than just looking at that. But it's definitely a real eye-opener and a great way of engaging people around the subject of both climate change and soil health and how the two are linked. So I wanted to basically kind of review the film or the documentary, depending on how you want to look at it, today, and just discuss it with you. Now, I will say that for the first maybe 15 minutes or so of the program, I was a little bit unsure as to how much I was going to enjoy it. And if you have a brain that works like mine, you may well feel the same. But I certainly came away from it at the end feeling that it was excellent. And I really, really, really enjoyed it. And I wanted to just share my thoughts on the show with you now. So the reason that I say the first 15 minutes or so was a little bit off-putting to me, it felt like there was quite a lot of correlation without causation necessarily shown. It shows a lot of statistics, a lot of data, but it doesn't necessarily back them up in a particularly scientific way. It shows, as I say, correlations between things like the amount of CO2 in the air and the time when Northern Hemisphere farmers are tilling the ground, are ploughing, and then the same amount of, or rather the varying amount of CO2 when the crops are growing. And it's definitely a very extreme difference. And the film makes the point that the two are intrinsically linked, and they may well be, but for me it was lacking a little bit of the scientific background to kind of show the link between the two. As I say, it was showing a correlation for sure, but it wasn't necessarily showing causation. And that's not me being necessarily skeptical that there is one at all, but I just felt that link was not necessarily demonstrated by any kind of scientific process, which I think was a shame. And that might be a case of just the time scales of trying to fit the amount of information that they wanted to fit into this. into the amount of time they had, but I felt there might have been a better way of doing it. So it goes on to start by saying really a bit of an overview about carbon and what carbon is, and that carbon necessarily isn't the bad guy. You know, carbon is a part of life on Earth, and we are made up in part of carbon. And it just goes to explain that the carbon dioxide in the air can be actually, well, is an essential part of the life cycle of organisms and the soil food web, you know, the part of the natural health of our soil, and that the plants that we grow take that carbon dioxide from the air. We all know this. They excrete oxygen into the air, but they deposit those carbon molecules down into the ground. And two things happen. One is that the soil actually stores some of that carbon, taking it out of the air, which is, you know, a very important job. And the other thing it does is it provides life to the micronutrients and the microbiology that's in our soil by putting that carbon there. And effectively, what's happened over the course of our history, where we've developed different farming practices, and the film goes into this in quite a lot of depth, and it's quite eye-opening how our state of farming basically evolved. But we've evolved to a stage where we're not having the soil act a natural way on most of our farms, particularly obviously in our monoculture farms. And what's happening is there are no nutrients really within the soil organically, naturally. There's no nutrients being put there by the photosynthesis of plants. There's no nutrients being retained and moved around there by the microbiology that we find in healthy soil. What's happening is we're having to add chemical nutrients by spraying nitrogen fertilizers and things like that onto those soils in order to grow crops, rather than allowing the natural cycle to take place. So the other downside of this method of farming and all of the tilling, and the program really does go to great lengths to try and make the case to farmers really that there is another way of farming without tilling, without ploughing, and that the ploughing itself is what's causing a great deal of the problems, because having ploughed soil that isn't growing any crops, is just barren in between crops, that's maybe growing one crop a year, is leading to desertification, the, you know, increase of desert, and that the soil isn't a lovely, healthy, loamy soil full of humus. It gradually becomes basically just dust, just dirt. And this is what created the great dust bowl down massive swathes of Central America throughout the last century. So it takes a nice path, really, once you get beyond the sort of setup, which for me didn't really hit the spot for me. But once you get beyond that, it goes into a lovely amount of depth of knowledge and sharing information to show you how we got to where we are really, and how it just made sense for the individuals at the time that were making these individual decisions, how it made sense that we got here. It's really easy for you to get in touch with us. You can do it either by sending an email to selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com, or by using the link in the show notes to send us a voice message. You can send us a voice message just using your phone. You could also reach out to us on Facebook, where we have the Self-Sufficient Hub group and the Self-Sufficient Hub page. We're always thrilled to get your feedback, questions, or suggestions for future topics on the show. So by the time we are about 15 minutes in, you know, we've made the case for the fact that our common farming practices at the moment, which is basically a cycle of growing a crop, quite frequently those crops would then be sprayed with a glyphosate weed killer. The actual crops we're eating are sprayed with that, believe it or not, at or before harvest. And then the ground is basically barren. And then that ground is tilled, and then it is sprayed with fertilizer, with nitrogen fertilizers and all sorts of other things to basically put the nutrients back in the ground that aren't there anymore, because the ground is not this amazing living thing that it should be. And then the cycle repeats. And it does, like I say, it makes the case really quite well and quite clearly. And despite my reservations about this portion of the show, you know, it is certainly a good way of getting its point across and of making the story understandable as to how we got to where we are. So at this point, we've got, you know, I don't know what percentage, but I think it is explained in the show. I think it's something like 95% of our farmland in America, and the show is made in America. It doesn't focus entirely on America. It focuses on the world, but obviously it's made in America, and a lot of the farming that we see, particularly in the first part of the show, is American. And it says that only 5% of farms in America are farmed in such a way that they actually take account of soil health. 95%. This isn't even part of the thinking, you know, it's not even part of the equation. And again, this is all tied into things like, well, it's economics, really, and the way that the farming subsidies are put in place. And again, I'm going to talk about the American system because at the moment, that's what we're talking about in the show. We're about, I don't know, 20 minutes in of this hour and a half show. And, you know, we start talking about the subsidy system and how the subsidy system's almost force farmers to stay within this monoculture system because so much of the crops grown in these monocultures are subsidized, and they're subsidized in such a way that it would hurt the farmers to make that initial change. But shortly we meet my hero, you know, he's my man, the guy who comes in, and he's going to tell us about what he did. He basically went through three years of growing a monoculture on his farm, and it was a, you know, a large farm, 90 acres or so, I think. It could even have been more than that. And basically, he had 4 years in a row where every single crop failed. He had 1 year where it was 100% failure, second year 100% failure, third year 100% failure, and then on the fourth year an 80% failure. So basically, no income for 4 years. And he just thought, you know, there has to be another way. And what he's done is he's turned his farm into a vibrant permaculture-based system, if you like. Not a regimented permaculture system, but he's growing 19 different crops in one field as cover crops. And these crops are doing the job of all the tillage and fertilizing that he was having to do previously. So now, even though we're not talking strictly about using permaculture and all of its principles and everything to govern us here, what we're saying is we can borrow from it and we can use some of those principles because by doing this, he's reduced his inputs. He's not having to purchase fertilizers. He's not having to purchase a lot of the inputs that you would otherwise have to purchase to use these monoculture systems. And he's biodiversified his entire portfolio, if you like. And he has now, and this really is the story of hope. This is where it begins because he's teamed up with a large group within the American food and environment industry, if you like, that are basically spreading the work and are spreading the word and trying to encourage other farmers to move to this system. Now, what's the global advantages of this beyond having more naturally grown food? Well, the amount of carbon that can actually be sequestered within the soil and stored there and drawn from the climate is absolutely groundbreaking. The film goes on to make lots and lots of claims. Again, I'd like it if they were a little bit more scientifically backed insofar as how radical they are, because the claims they make are sort of, you know, within 20 years, we can actually see the climate reduce in temperature and start going back down. And these are really lofty claims and lofty goals. And I'm not saying that they're not achievable. I'm just saying I think that it would have been good if there was a little bit more of the science to back it included within the film. We go on to meet with climate scientists all across the world, including at a large convention in France. And the French were basically the ones to put together this idea, this initiative for the entire world to sign up to move into these new systems of farming. And I say new systems, but these are the ways that it was always done, this biosequestration and the drawdown of carbon into the soil. And basically, they tried to get the whole world to sign up to this agreement. And I think it's called the 4 in 1,000 agreement, where if the farming communities of the world got together and agreed to try and sequester just 4 parts in 1,000 every year of carbon into the soil, that would actually capture all the carbon that we're emitting and also some of our carbon legacy, because that's another part of this picture that sometimes people don't think about. You can now support the show directly. Just go to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. You can become a patron and set up to donate to the show from any amount. Pledging as little as $3 a month makes a huge difference. If that's not your thing, you can also support the show by sharing it with people you know or posting about it on social media. We really appreciate all the help that you give us. It's people like you that make this show possible. So our carbon legacy is the amount of carbon dioxide that's already in the environment. This is the stuff we've put in there. And the issue with a lot of our interventions and a lot of our initiatives as a global community on climate change is that the focus is in reducing our emissions, getting our emissions to zero. Well, that's great. That's absolutely fantastic. But what it doesn't deal with is the carbon legacy. It doesn't deal with the carbon that's already in the atmosphere that we've put in there above and beyond what would be part of the natural environment. So what we're trying to do is not only reduce our emissions to zero, but we absolutely have to sequester some of that carbon that's already there. So this initiative is about achieving that. And it really is astounding, actually, the amount of carbon that can be stored sustainably in our soil. We just have to change the way we farm. And how do we do that? Well, I don't own 1,000 acres and I don't own a monoculture that I can change. But of course, we can change with our voting by our pockets method. You know, we can choose where we spend our money. We can choose where the demand is. So by demanding meat, if we're going to eat meat that is grass-fed on, you know, free-ranging grass-fed meat, then that's how we vote with our pocket. And by using ethically sourced food, and obviously by growing our own food, these are how we vote with our pocket, by not funding the mass production, by not funding the methods that lead to desertification. This is how we do it. Now, obviously, in the course of this podcast, what I'm not trying to do, I'm not trying to make it so you don't need to watch the film. I'm trying to make it so that you do go and watch the film after, or even before, and then you use this podcast as a way of just, you know, following up your thoughts with it. But the idea is that by encouraging our farmers to use more sustainable methods of farming, by a natural process, we're going to create a regenerative system. And our input on that is by our inputs at the shops, by where we choose to put those pressures, where we choose to put those demands. Having said that, that doesn't mean that we can't all do our bit as well. Now, obviously, I'm preaching to the choir here, but, you know, by creating beautiful interactive plant guilds and food forests and things like that in our own back gardens, we are also doing this on a smaller scale, but a scale that does affect us. Now, the chap I was talking to you about before is called Gabe Brown, and he calls himself a regenerative rancher. And throughout the documentary, we visit him several times, and he talks about all the different methods and the different options that are available to people who are farming on a larger scale. But the beauty of it is he's preaching to other people to kind of help them see the light, if you like, because he's moved from a system that was not making money, was losing money, and wouldn't have existed without the subsidies. And he's moved to a system that is extremely profitable without the subsidies. So he's trying to encourage others to follow his lead. And I have to say, his enthusiasm and his ability to communicate is infectious. And like I say, in this documentary, he's my guy, you know, I really like him. And he's shown and is continuing to show other farmers that there are ways to make more money by using less intrusive methods on the environment. And it's just a massive part of this story. We spend some time next just talking about, you know, the history again of cattle farming and cattle grazing and how that works, and how by using correctly stewarded land, you can actually create cattle farming that is carbon negative, that is actually going to sequester carbon from the atmosphere. It's the methods of farming and using feedlots where cattle are confined in small feedlots and that feed is grown elsewhere in monocultures. It's that method which is of detriment to us. So again, I'm going to go back to something I have mentioned in the past. I'm not saying that veganism isn't a great way of contributing as well, because it is. You know, if you, as I've said many, many times, if you are a vegan for moral and ethical reasons, then that is a very, very firm piece of ground to stand on, and I salute you. But I'm just trying to say that there are also other ethical ways of eating along with veganism. I like to think the way I eat is a very ethical way of eating, and I certainly consider the ethics of everything I eat. But it's to do with things like the pasture land density and the methods used in creating the meat that can really make a difference. But not everything is about huge agricultural systems. There are so many other things that make a difference as well.
You can find Self-Sufficient Hub content elsewhere online in lots of other places. We have a YouTube channel. We also have our website. And now there's our Facebook page and Facebook group. Links to all of these you can find in the show notes. Come check us out.
Next up, we start talking about some of the more civic ways that things can change and that we can make a difference. And we start off talking about food waste. Now, obviously, food waste has been a topic of this show before, and it is an integral part of this picture. It's like I always say, how all these things build on top of each other and compound each other. Part of the reason that we have created these intensive farming systems is because of the demand. And of course, we can reduce demand right in the first instance by reducing our food waste. Food has become so overproduced and easy, not easy to produce, but easy to purchase. It's almost been devalued. And in that devaluation is a loss of our personal value of the thing, and we tend to be a little bit more, as a society, we tend to be a little bit less careful with how we use it, and as a result we have a ridiculous amount of food waste. Well, obviously the first step in reducing that demand is by reducing the food waste in our kitchens, by reducing the amount of waste we produce, but also by making sure that the food waste that is inevitably produced, particularly in larger civilian populations, is managed in a way that makes a difference. And we look at a initiative in Detroit where it's called Detroit Dirt, and we're literally salvaging all the food waste from residents and but from restaurants and places like that, and we're turning it into compost. We go back to the soil health, and if we can regenerate our soil and get those nutrients and the health that we need in our soil from compost, then we're solving two problems. You see how these things are compounding one another. By reducing our food waste and saving our food waste, turning it into compost, we're not sending it to landfill, so we're reducing that load there, but we're also using it to regenerate our soil. And in doing so, we need to put less artificial fertilizers in our soil. So these are all things we can all get involved in. We can all find places that are having these kind of initiatives, and we can get involved with them. We can start our own. We can encourage others. And by having these sort of organized initiatives, we're able to reduce that food waste, create all this compost, which can be either sold at a, you know, reduced cost, and that money can be used to fund the system. And that compost could be made available to people who otherwise might not be able to. But also by keeping that out of landfill, there's just a double whammy of positive effects. And then having that compost used to grow plants were again sequestering that carbon from the atmosphere. Next, we start talking about, you know, human waste, and people have a bit of a, understandably, I suppose, you know, aversion to using that for compost. But by using compost toilets, again, we're doing the same thing. You know, we're reducing the amount of effort and energy that's used in turning that compost into otherwise usable material, because generally speaking, you know, the world over, that's where a lot of it's going to end up anyway. It's going to end up as compost, but we can do that ourselves by using things like compost loos. And we start talking about different places around the world where there are initiatives to start using compost loos again to regenerate the soil. We next have a conversation again with a couple of vegans, and again we're talking about how a plant-based diet again can have a positive effect. But what I do like about this, and it's the first time I've really heard this, is they start making the same sort of points that I've been making about how pasture raised meat can also sequester carbon into the soil. You know, it doesn't have to be a binary decision, you know, a one way or another way decision. Next, we're back with my man, and we're talking about the looking forward, really. We start now looking at some of the ways that we might start feeling a little bit more positive. And he explains something that is really quite stark and positive, and I think it is a sign of the times. He was saying how when he started farming, you know, all the farming magazines, none of them would ever mention soil health. It just wasn't something that was in the zeitgeist of commercial farming. Whereas now you can't buy a farming magazine without an article on soil health. So I just think that that alone is such a positive change in our affect and a positive, a way of seeing at least some positive is happening. You know, the direction of travel is a good one. We next go over and start looking at some areas in China and elsewhere where civilization really first started taking hold, and we look at some of the areas that were just completely devastated and the vegetation was just gone and they were turned into deserts, and how some of them have just in the last, and the change is really dramatic and it's shown in the film, have started turning back into farmland. The deserts have been reclaimed, and by using sustainable methods, we have started reclaiming some of this ground and turned it back into lush ground where food can be grown, and the positive effects that this has had. So we're getting at the end of the film now, and we start wrapping up with some, you know, just general positive notes and about how we can all connect with each other, with the soil, and how we can make a difference, and how this could actually be the solution to climate change. And I certainly wouldn't have thought so without watching the film, but I do think that this really could be a huge part of the solution to climate change by sequestering that carbon in the ground. So that brings me to an end of my review of the show. I hope you go out and watch it if you haven't already, and let me know what you think. Please do get in touch. Let me know what you think. Send me an email, selfsufficientcontact@gmail.com, or follow the link in the show notes and leave me a voice message. You could also send me a voice message by just recording one on your phone, on your voice memo app, and sending that to me. I do love to get them, and I will play them on the show. Thanks for listening, and I will speak to you guys soon. If you find this podcast valuable, there's several ways you can support it. The easiest of which is to rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. You could also talk about it or share it wherever you post online, including your social media pages. And now you can support the podcast directly by becoming a patron at patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, we really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. See you soon.